podcast about music.
Well, I guess we can't put it off any longer.
Why do we want to put it off? It's another fantastic week in music on the Balls Podcast After Dark.
Look, you've already dealt with one of the...
Well, we've half reviewed All Nerve.
I thought you guys did... You did a pretty good job of reviewing that.
What would you like to add?
Well, the funny thing was is that the only thing that I had to really add is I reviewed the Breeders in the context of the other album, because I really didn't expect that the other album would be up my alley. So I was like really looking forward to the Breeders. I was like, oh, this is the album that I'm going to be, you know, keen on.
Yeah.
And it was a bit meh.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'd built it up in my own mind that, you know, oh, this is going to be a fucking, you know, I just thought it would hit the spots that I liked, especially since...
Well, Cannonball, that's the thing, like I said, when Adam and I were talking about it.
Yeah.
It's sort of Cannonball. Yeah, it's Cannonball. You're just hoping. And that's if you go and listen to... Remember the first time I ever listened to Last Splash, I was disappointed. But this would have been fucking in the 90s. Because the rest of the album didn't sound like Cannonball. And I think that's the problem. They had such a fucking transcendent pop hit. And they were never able to follow it with anything of equivalent value. So it was always a little bit of disappointment.
Yeah.
I was thinking more about it during the week.
It's one of those older musician records that they still want to make music, and you can't begrudge them that, but it just doesn't feel... It feels like they've lost the fire.
It just feels like a sadder version of what they were doing previously. And you know what? I was thinking about this. This feels more like the Pixies than in some kind of way. And it reminds me a little bit of... Remember that we reviewed that Pixies album a year or two ago? They had like a comeback album. And it wasn't very good. But the stuff on this feels a little bit more like the stuff they did on that Pixies comeback album than straight down the line, or you know, than sort of period consistent fucking Breeders. But yeah, I mean, everything we said last week, it's just like everyone, they got old and sad, and then they're making music for the old and sad.
Whereas Fu Manchu was fucking awesome. It was kick-ass.
Now, this is another old band who are just making the shit they've always made. I mean, these guys have been around since the early 90s. And
I deliberately did not go back and listen to any of their earlier stuff.
And you know what?
In case it was better and it made me not enjoy this as much, because I really fucking enjoyed it.
The thing about that, all their early stuff was on this legendary sort of punk metal rock label called Mammoth, which has gone defunct. And so... A lot of their best albums from the 90s you can't get on Spotify, because they're not the whoever owns the rights to them hasn't put them up there. The best old Fu Manchu album that's online I would say is probably Eaten Dust, which has actually got like a release date of 2010 on Spotify, but it's like in 1999, so it's like the very end of the 90s. But it's a fucking amazing album. It's really cool. But yeah, this is what the kids call stoner rock in the 90s. Just big, chunky, fuzzy, grungy riffs. Just
fuzzy, chunky, awesome. Like there's just fuzzy is the word that I would use to describe it. There's just some like it's almost like electronic distortion. I know that's not what it is, but it was so much fun. Like it got that last track got a little bit wanky in the first half of it, the 18-minute track or whatever it is.
It was almost like the album was like two EPs. It was always exactly split down the middle. The first 18 minutes were period perfect fucking Fu Manchu. That felt that's what Fu Manchu sounded like. And then there was that 18-minute sort of epic. But I think the disappointing thing about that was, you kind of think, well, okay, they're doing an 18-minute song. They're going to start off with stuff, and they're going to go off in different directions and come back, and go off in different directions and come back. And yeah, they kind of did that, but they didn't really sell it that well. It didn't really feel like it was a coherent piece. It just kind of felt like a whole bunch of riffs they couldn't fit into other songs.
Well, the first half of that song, right, I'm listening to it yesterday, the day before, and I was like, oh man, this is such a fucking wank. And then there's the lyrics kick in.
Yeah, but halfway through the light the throttle bit, and that's the best part of the song. You only have to wait 9 minutes
for it. And it's actually really enjoyable. And I was like, oh, actually, I've been a little bit harsh on these guys. This is quite good. But yeah. Anyway, I just fucking enjoy this album. Every time I listen to it,
there is there isn't a lot of peak Fu Manchu on Spotify, but there is there's a double live album on called.
Actually, that'd be cool.
Yeah, I listened to that over the last couple of days, and it is from when they were really good. And I'm not saying they're really good now, but you know, it's sort of 2003, I think. But no, they sound really good, and you can sort of get a feel for the kind of riffs they go through. But the best, I mean, the best of the studio albums that's on Spotify is probably the Eat and Dust Godzilla, which is actually, I think, two EPs that were mashed together. Yeah, I mean, as I say, it's kind of this album is a bit of a hybrid of kind of an EP and or it feels like an EP, a hybrid of an EP and then kind of a stoner rock space jam. And I'm not entirely convinced the space jam works, but I'm convinced the rest of it works because it's Fu Manchu and Fu Manchu are fucking awesome. So it's a bit hard to sort of say, you know how we were talking about, you know, great legacy bands, you know, great legacy albums of the year. It's hard to really talk about this in any way other than this is just an absolute continuation of what they've always done. It's a little bit like AC/DC. This is what they do, and it's what they've always done, and they do it really well.
Yep. I would put this up with the Prodigy album, except that I have any historical context for them, so I don't know.
You don't know
whether
this is. I mean, it is what they've always done. It is what they do really well. So. And I would recommend anybody who enjoys this sound to dig into their back catalogue. But as a shortcut, just dig into that that double live album and the Eat and Dust Godzilla album. That's a really good one. And if also you like this particular genre, another band to look into is a Swedish band called Truck Fighters, who popped up about 10 years after this scene. The stoner rock scene was going off in the deserts of California and produced an amazing sort of pitch perfect version of that same sound from the other side of the world 10 years after the fact. It was kind of remarkable, but they were kind of adopted into the scene even though they were from the other side of the world. They just somehow managed to fucking get it. And their album Gravity X is another a very good example of this genre. And of course other bands like Caius and early Queens of the Stone Age, like Rated R, kind of fits into this genre as well.
Yeah, okay. I didn't get that Rated R vibe from this, but I guess I see it.
This is more kind of stripped back and just based in the
It's a lot rawer, bigger, I think. Yeah,
fucking gutsy bluesy riffs.
I was at this barbecue I was at this afternoon. I was, you know, get on this album, guys. It's a fucking good album. All right,
you were selling.
Shall we talk about the Cat Empire?
Sure, Cat Empire.
So I had an epiphany with this album, right?
So not a Gibson.
No.
You had an epiphany. Do they still make epiphanies?
I have no idea. But
guitar joke.
For one, I completely disagree with this. Is not a one song album. Adam, I'm sorry.
No, if you're going to. I said it was. I agree it's a one song album.
Okay. Well, I actually think the one song is the song I enjoyed the least re-listening to this album. I did not enjoy listening to the album.
No, I think the point that being that all the songs so sound the same. Fucking that's, time. That's the point of the one song thing. It's not that there was one popular song. It's that all the songs sound the fucking same.
My epiphany was, I literally listened to the opening bars of the first song and went, if you don't like brass, you are never going to find this album accessible. It is so fucking heavy on the horns.
Well, it's heavy on horns, but what it's really heavy on is bootleg Buena Vista Social Club shit.
Yeah, absolutely. That is their vibe.
Yeah, it reminds me of like sometimes you see like a Twitter bot that just clips and regurgitates bits of other people's conversations out of context, and it has no understanding of the meaning behind it. It just sort of puts it forth, and then other bots like it. That's basically the category. They just take bits and pieces of other people's music that they don't understand and sort of mash it up together and put it forward, and they were unexplainably popular for a very brief period of time.
For one, they were fucking awesome live. They were a great live band. No doubt about it. They were awesome live. Saw them live heaps of times. How would you feel about a band that was... I understand what you're saying, and that they aren't, you know, they're not Cuban brass. They're not authentic in that way. But how would you say, like, any band that tried to do AC/DC or any band that tried to do Led Zeppelin?
AC/DC is not complicated. I mean, Airborne have been doing a very serviceable... In fact, there's an Airborne B-sides album that's just come out, and I can't figure out how do you distinguish an Airborne B-side from an Airborne A-side. They all sound the fucking same. They're exactly the same songs with exactly the same chord progressions, and it's just... It's impossible to figure out, but it's a simple art, you know. It's simply done.
Yeah,
this is a noisy chill.
Like, I think to their essence is a little bit like the Resin Dogs in that they just wanted to make people get up and dance. That was all they wanted to do. They didn't want to be Buena Vista Social Club. They didn't care about any of that. They didn't care about what bracket. They just wanted to get people up and dancing. And I think they did that pretty effectively. Look, there's fucking heaps of bands that have the same sound on every song. I don't know whether that's necessarily a bad thing.
No, but the idea is you pick a sound that's good.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's only bad if you don't like that sound. And I think it boils down to, I like this sound and you don't.
And neither does Adam, and neither does my wife, and neither does anybody who has listened to these people since 2005.
But my wife loves this
album. I know, and that's the only reason we love this album, fucking because you get out of it. And I knew it came down to the fact that you got sex from this album. I knew that's the only fucking reason that anyone would listen to this album.
This is
because
my,
they might get fucked.
This is not in my sex music playlist.
Oh, God.
All right, shall we talk about some
we need to keep going here. The wine song. That's fucked garbage. That is fucked garbage. 145 is just a rip-off of Cool for Cats. Shitty fucking La Bamba. Half of the album is shitty fucking novelty songs that all should all go in the bin. And when we got to the part where he was singing about sleeping on the Sicilian sand, I've never wished for a tsunami more in my fucking life. Push them into the fucking sea.
I've got no comeback. Oh, because you know what? With other music, I feel like I can argue a point with you and you might actually consider it. With this album, as soon as I picked it, I was like, I'm just wasting my time.
Well,
I really
no,
am.
What you were doing is creating hashtag content. And that was, people have put it out to us. Sometimes it's fun just for you to pick a shit album and for me to just fucking tee
it's
off.
It's not
on
a shit album, though. This
no,
is
it's,
a good
it's
album.
Unequivocally
it's
a shit
it's
album.
An enjoyable album. I want to follow that up with some some follow-up on some of the stuff that Adam had, because I think he misunderstood some of the Ice House versus Thriller content.
Are we doing Thriller is Trash 5? Assignment Miami Beach! Is that Assignment Miami Beach or is that
Mission Moscow? It's the gift that keeps on giving. I really don't think that I was pushing the line that Ice House is an absolute stone cold classic that everybody should consider a classic. I think
it's my classic. Point was absolutely valid that you were holding up Ice House as a classic and Thriller is not. That's a fact. We can go back and pull the tapes on that one. Whether that's what you meant, that's what you said.
But yeah, that's absolutely what I said. But it's a classic in my own mind. Like I know, just like I'm not going to convince you that Cat Empire is a good album. I have a heap of friends on Facebook that you could argue to your blue in the face, and they would say Thriller is the best and the most influential album that has ever been made. And it's just not fucking true.
Well, it is to them.
Michael Jackson's stuff before Thriller was more influential than Thriller. You nailed it by saying Thriller is the most influential pop culture music video album that he ever did. Like, it was the breakthrough for that medium, that album. But musically...
But you can't actually pull it apart from that. That's kind of the problem.
No, that's right.
But what
that's
you're
right.
talking it's, about is it's exactly a little bit... what we were talking about anyway, in that it's a... doesn't matter. I've got to stop.
But like Ice House is, I realise Ice House is a classic only in my own mind. I realise that. Like,
but that's the thing. I mean, the point has never been, and you thank you for reminding me what the point was. As I said to him, we have never been in the business of determining the new shortlist for the next series of classic albums, as in capital C, capital A, the television series. That's not what this is about. Mm. And I think the most interesting part of that whole conversation was getting into the fact that we're all using completely different judging criteria when it comes to classic albums, in that you and he do absolutely the opposite things in terms of weighing the value of influence on genre and longevity. And I'm kind of in the middle, because I'm interested in the influence, but I'm also prepared to put all that aside.
This is what's going to really piss you off. Cat Empire is not a classic album. It's not. It's,
I know.
It's a fun album.
It's not going to piss me off, because I know it's a fact. It's not a classic album.
It's good fun, and I enjoy it, but it's not a classic album. Oh, like, I'm sick to death of Hello. And the rest of the album is...
Hello?
It's good. Hello. It's good fun to listen to, and I listened to it a couple of times and went, oh, yeah, I enjoyed that album, but it's not...
I can park that for a few more years.
Yeah, I can park that for a few. Whereas I went back and I watched a movie that was scored by the Chemical Brothers, and it just sent me off on another Chemical Brothers trip. And it's just
what was that? That was a couple of years ago.
Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah. Yeah.
Hannah, and it's so effective. Like, you listen to the Hannah soundtrack and it's okay, but you watch that music scored, and oh my god, it's effective. There's some bits where it's like, you can really feel the main characters, like the pressure on the main character, or the frenetic pace that this person's trying to think at through the music. Like, so effective.
Well, you can do that with electronic music really effectively.
Yeah, yeah. And but it just sent me down another Chemical Brothers hole, and it's just like, fuck, I just love their music. Their music is just so, for me, it no matter how many times I listen to it, it continues to push the buttons that it does the first time.
Pun intended,
to it.
I assume.
Yes,
time
that's
has
right.
come to push the button.
Push the button. And Double J did another Hunters and Collectors live set, and that Living in Small Rooms and Lounges double album does the same thing for me. I can go and listen to other Hunters music, but that album just does something for me that none of their other music does. And so I guess I have, and I guess you do too, have a little headcanon space of our albums that if we were producing the classic albums TV show that we would want to pick, but this album would not be on that list. Well, I don't think I'm quite happy not to listen to this album for another couple of years.
I just don't believe that you can do the classic album thing without some understanding or some discussion of influence and longevity and impact on culture and that sort of stuff. But I certainly don't believe that you can, that it's the only thing that's important, and you can hold things up as being, wow, this has been around for 30 years, therefore it's important. Mm. If as we've always said, it's come through a choke point in culture where it was the only thing around. So of course it has a, you know, it has a Bill Russell style.
Yeah. It has 11 influence. Rings
because, you know, yeah, it was great, but what else was there at the same time? It didn't have to compete with the shit that everything else does now.
Yeah. Like I've got a couple of St. George fans at work and
yeah. 1956 to 66.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, but there was no salary cap. There was no equalization. Like, you know, like context matters. Yeah. It really fucking does.
And comparing errors, as we said last week in both the sport and the music podcast, is completely futile because of that very same fact.
You and I both listen to a lot of podcasts where in like a lot of different areas, smart people say, hey, context really fucking matters. You can't put things in isolation and just say that is better than A is better than B without looking at the context. You certainly can't put Mello in isolation
because he'll just brick a fucking three for the car park.
That's crossing the streams. All right, shall we talk some new music? Oh, I have to say, I forgave all of everything that Adam says because of the utter such plain disgust in his voice when you mentioned the Foves. That sigh when she went the Foves.
Everyone hates the Foves. In fact, my just disinterest in them almost becomes like a favoritism. I end up being the only one defending them because I don't hate them as much as everyone else.
Even your dogs are the best people joke was like, oh, do I have to put the effort in? Oh, I guess so. it was so Foves like it was hilarious. So yes, Adam, all is forgiven, even if you do like the Beatles.
Tell them yourself.
Yes, in person in a couple of weeks, hopefully.
There's a foreshadowing, a future special.
There's a little sizzle for you people. Yeah. New music. I'm going to go with an album from Press Club this week.
Was that Press Club?
Press Club, as every time in you the say Australian... press,
the for some reason it goes. Press. I'm guessing it might be a pop filter issue.
Press Club sort of came onto this, like they were, you know, always way too big for my sort of venues, but they started to come onto the scene. Like I remember hearing about them just when I was starting to get out of the thing, but I quite like them. I quite like their first album anyway. So let's have a listen to the new one. It's called Late Teens. And then,
this being St. Patrick's Day, I was driving through Studentville today and I saw quite a lot of late teens wearing green, completely vomitiferously slashed, staggering around the place. Got flashed at one point, which was a thing.
Wow. Well, I can't remember the last time I got flashed.
He seemed nice.
Look, excellent.
No. I hope she made good decisions for the rest of the day that were better than that decision. And I hope she's sleeping happily in her own bed. Because you're a parent when you walk past a whole bunch of really drunk fucking, you know, 18 to 20 year old kids.
I hope you all get home. Just make good decisions.
You're not thinking, I'd like to be out there. You're thinking, God, I hope you all get okay. And I hope your parents know where you are.
Let's double up. Let's double down on the Australian music, and I'll go Sarah Blasco's new album, Depth of Field, as well. So those are my two new albums. What do you got for a classic?
Well, we discovered
in inverted commas.
We were completely unable to identify when and where we reviewed Cream's Disraeli Gears. But we were also completely unable to identify when we reviewed Jimi Hendrix. So I'm going to leave Cream to you, and I'm going to pick Jimi Hendrix. Yeah. Are you experienced?
I'm sure we've talked about them in context of.
I was pretty sure we'd reviewed, albums, we've reviewed them, but you know, there's no evidence to say we have. So let's back go back and do it again.
I went back and listened to that Cream album this week, just once through. Like I didn't want to because I was like, well, I'm probably going to pick this again since we haven't fucking picked it, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure we haven't done this because there's songs here that don't ring any bells at all that I've listened to before. And I realize this is me, and that's quite possible that I have listened to them and still don't remember them because we listen to a shitload of music. But yeah, okay. Jimi Hendrix.
Now, there's two versions of I Have Experienced on Spotify. Take the one with the dark cover. Not the one with the yellow cover. Just because that's the version that I had. And so they have a slightly different track order. They have the same tracks, but it's just to keep it consistent with the version that I know. You know how sometimes track order can be important.
So I've got a yellow cover and a green.
Sort of a dark and then a green cover. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the green one.
It's the green one? Okay. Interesting. Yeah, because that does make a difference, doesn't it? That
it's just what you're used to. If the first version you'd heard was the yellow, I think the green was the British release and the yellow was the American release, possibly, or the other way around. Yeah. But it's the version I'm used to.
It's like that book thing where they localize it for certain markets. Yeah. It's just a weird thing. Like, I can understand it for books where you make the language and you make references that sort of, you know, the English would understand, but Americans wouldn't. Like, I understand that, but changing the track listing for different markets just seems fucking weird to me.
Yeah, well, actually, we did British Steel the other week by Judas Priest. In the American version, they open with Breaking the Law because that was the single. And I think that was the idea with that. They changed the track law because the version the version on Spotify opens with Rapid Fire, which is the song that we opened the episode with. I just happened to be listening to that episode again just to remind myself of something earlier. But they changed the track order in the American market to put the single because they were trying to break a new band, whereas in Britain they were much more established and they didn't really feel they needed to do that. So, you know, that's one reason they could do it. And I expect that if I go back and look at the different track orders of the various Are You Experienced, it'll be something to do with that.
And like it does fuck with your head because I, you know, Chemical Brothers all their music is stuff that has very careful consideration of the track order, and that they actually blend into one. A lot of the albums blend, you know, from one song to the other. And I had not taken it off shuffle from when I had the kids' music on, and you know, I'm so conditioned to hear that. But like some of the blending of the two songs is some of the best bits of the Chemical Brothers, and.
Get these weird abrupt fucking transitions.
Yeah, get these weird abrupt transitions. I was like, what the fuck's going on? Really fuck with my head. I get to quickly go in and restart the album from scratch just to get that transition to soothe my mind, you know? It's amazing with, especially the music you listen to for such a long time a particular way. Like I always joke about that Hunters song where they start off with the first bit of the track is this is a really strange version of the Slab, and it's like, well, this is the only version of the Slab that I really understand. I don't know what the, because I don't really like the album that song comes off. So anyway. just some musings on track listings there for everybody.
Of course, they're listening to the, as long as they don't listen to our podcast out of order, they'll listen to episode.
That's right.
We'll be up to 128 of the After Dark.
We except for tonight, we progressively get more sober as we get in deeper into the episodes.
I don't think that would...
And you can't, if you listen to some of the early episodes, that's totally true.
Well, yes. But they were also some of the most entertaining episodes.
That's right.
Oh, my God. Oh, I'm watching this live stream from Goodwood, the prehistoric racing festival. It is fucking sleeting, and they're out on slicks in priceless, irreplaceable 70s Formula 5000 cars.
Really?
Sticker Man, slicks, Formula 5000s. Oh, my God. I don't know what they're doing. I think they should stop doing it. It is. It's snow. It's snow flurries and hail. It is Britain in March. I don't know what the fuck they think they're doing. It's too early to be doing this. It is amazing.
All right, Doc. I will catch you on the flip side for next week. See ya. It was funny. I was talking about the podcast. I was at this barbecue this afternoon and talking about this podcast. And Colin's like, yeah, Beezer has got this podcast. None of us listen to it, but he still does it every week. It's like,
look, it's not for you. You're not the audience.
No.